You want to come up here with me.
Good morning. Lieutenant Governor Kim Reynolds is attending meetings in Washington, D.C., so she was not able to join us today. This morning, it is a pleasure for me to officially launch Global Entrepreneurship Week in Iowa. Global Entrepreneurship Week is the world's largest celebration of innovators and job creators who launch startups that bring ideas to life, drive economic growth and development, and improve human welfare. During 1 week each November, Global Entrepreneurship Week inspires people everywhere through local, national, and global activities designed to help entrepreneurs explore their potential as self-starters and innovators. Global Entrepreneurship Week is actively celebrated in 125 countries and directly engages millions of participants every year. When Lieutenant Governor Reynolds and I set forth our aggressive job growth agenda, it was obvious that Iowa's small businesses would play an integral role in achieving this ambitious goal. Small businesses are the backbone of our state's economy, accounting for 51.3% of private sector jobs. Continued support for and a renewed focus on identifying the state's role in advancing small business is necessary not only to reach our ambitious job goals, but also to improve Iowa's position for entrepreneurial development and innovation. IA Source Link, Iowa's online resource tool for entrepreneurs and small businesses, confirms that small businesses are indeed making a difference to the state's business climate by connecting entrepreneurs to technical and financial resources. As a part of the Iowa Economic Development Authority's continuing work with existing small businesses in the state and efforts to support the creation of more small businesses, they've been working with an ad hoc advisory committee to determine ways to further improve the environment for entrepreneurship and obtain invaluable insight as to how best meet the needs of Iowa small business. One of the committee's recommendations was to improve access to the many resources that are available to small business owners but are sometimes difficult to locate. As a result, last November, the Iowa Economic Development Authority, in partnership with the University of Northern Iowa, established iasourcelink.com. Over the past year, iasourcelink.com has provided a solid foundation of assistance and guidance to our entrepreneurial community. As a result, I can think of no better way to mark IA SourceLink's first anniversary and achievements than to celebrate Global Entrepreneurship Week and invite entrepreneurs and innovators to get involved. Activities scheduled around around the state this week promise to attract every type of entrepreneur. Just to give you an idea of some of the events, just this past weekend, Des Moines celebrated a startup weekend. A great success. I understand there were 7 startup companies that were started as a result of that. The Quad Cities Chamber is currently hosting their Dream Big, Grow Here contest. West Des Moines is holding a 1 million cups event on Wednesday. Southeast Community College in Burlington, entrepreneurs can attend a free 2-hour workshop tomorrow entitled Smart Start. The workshop will focus on analyzing your business idea and cover what you need to know to launch your business. Commemorating events such as those taking place during Global Entrepreneurship Week places a spotlight on the significant contributions that entrepreneurs and small businesses make to the state's overall vitality. Though we are celebrating Global Entrepreneurship this week, these events are simply a snapshot of the multitude of entrepreneurial events that take place throughout the state all year long. Just a couple of weeks ago, the Lieutenant Governor and I had the honor of attending the annual Immigrant Entrepreneurial Summit at Drake University. This was the biggest one they've ever had, over 500 in attendance. I know that the Lieutenant Governor and I signed certificates honoring 114 businesses that started by immigrant entrepreneurs in the last year. For a full listing of the events occurring statewide through the end of this week, and of course beyond, you can go to iasourcelink.com. Now it is my pleasure to introduce Kevin Lentz, who is chair of the Iowa Economic Development Authority's Ad Hoc Small Business Advisory Committee. Kevin is a successful small business owner himself and has been an invaluable part of the team that has been involved intricately with iasourcelink.com's development activities. Kevin, please share your thoughts with us.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. It's an honor to be here today. It's hard to believe that I was in this very room a year ago launching and creating the official launch of Iowa SourceLink. And how fitting is it 12 months later that we are back here right in the midst of Global Entrepreneurship Week to celebrate our one-year anniversary. As the governor mentioned, Iowa SourceLink is a robust digital platform that connects entrepreneurs and small businesses with over 300 service providers across our great state. Specifically, those organizations provide practical, technical, and financial assistance regardless of what stage a business might be in, whether it be a concept or someone in their growth cycle. Its development was the creation of a strong private partnership with IEDA, leadership from small business community, guidance from key small business providers across our state, and of course the support from our good friends at the University of Northern Iowa's MyIntranet team. The tool itself, if you've not been on the site, is driven by what's called the Resource Navigator. It's a fully searchable database which easily allows for entrepreneurs and small businesses to seek out the type of assistance they are needing, and most importantly, match them with the providers across our state that can deliver it. It includes a calendar of statewide events that allows for resource providers to promote important things such as webinars, conferences, and seminars, and help make sure that attendees are aware of it and can get there. And it also features a unique part of the program, which is called the Business Concierge Service, that actually allows small businesses and entrepreneurs to actually talk to a real person. Believe that in this day, talk to a real person via phone, chat, or email in search of assistance. As you can imagine, it's been a busy first year for us. Initially, we were focused on the site itself and, of course, the support that it needed to be put in place. And most recently, we began to focus on the content, traffic, and promotion of the site. We're extremely proud of what we've accomplished the first year. The width and breadth of our service providers is second to none. Our traffic ranks fourth out of the top 20 affiliates in the SourceLink affiliate nation. Our content has continued to evolve and improve, and our event and webinar participation has far exceeded any expectations that we had when we first began. We realize and understand we'll always be a little bit of a work in progress, and we're continually evaluating ways to improve the site and its content, get the word out about the site itself, which is why days like today are so important for us, assist our resource partners and make sure that we are driving clients to them and meet the demands of the entrepreneurs and small businesses across our state. Those efforts include some very exciting initiatives that we're going to preview this morning. First, the State of Iowa Business License Information Center will become a part of SourceLink. That will provide personalized assistance to help small businesses in identifying and securing their required business registrations and licensing. And I can tell you firsthand, as a small business owner, that can be very confusing and very daunting. So we're very excited to have the licensing part added to SourceLink. We have a new collaboration with the Iowa Bar Association, which will help increase awareness and provide access to the legal community for new startups as well as existing businesses. We're really excited about a new two-way partnership with the Iowa Secretary of State. That's going to give small businesses a more streamlined approach to the registration process, as well as bolster traffic to each other's sites. So to this end, we're going to continue to work and seek out other relationships, primarily within the state agencies and departments themselves, that will collectively help us reach our ultimate goal, which is one, helping create a number of new businesses and the jobs that go along with it across our state in line with the governor's plan, as well as improve the success rate and bring the stability to companies that need it. So as you can see, it's been a busy and productive year for us. We're not resting by any stretch. We've got an aggressive 12-month plan in place, and we're confident that we will experience another year of growth and see the emergence of success stories all across the state of Iowa in the next 12 months. And Governor, I would welcome an invitation to return 12 months from now to share another year of success with Iowa SourceLink and we appreciate your support.
You bet, Kevin.
Thank you.
Well, as you can see, this has been, it's a great launch and has gone a long ways in the last year in building some important collaborations. We'd open it now to questions you might have on this subject. Why don't you need to come up here to answer that?
Well, that is always a really difficult thing to do. We've spent the last 12 months really trying to put metrics into place. So we are looking at things like registrations over the last 12 months. What we know for sure is that 26,000 folks visited the site. But do we have an actual number today? No, I apologize. I wasn't prepared to answer that question. But we do know that there's been tremendous activity around the site. We know we've had 800-plus people attend our webinars and our activities. So we know that people are getting to the site. We also know that the proliferation and startup of businesses can be a long-time standing event. So sometimes people are in the concept stage, and sometimes people are actually within the business cycle itself. So, again, we do know we've had a lot of activity, and we are now in the process, being 12 months down the road, where we can begin to benchmark what we have done. And, again, I said I look back, come back 12 months from now and be able to report those numbers.
I would also point out this is just one of many tools, but I think it's an effective tool. And I really like the idea of how they're partnering with things like the Bar Association and Secretary of State and others to expedite this procedure and to simplify the process for entrepreneurs and small business.
26,000 unique.
70%+ of those were unique. 26,000 visitors, 70%+. 26,000 visitors, 70%+ of those were unique visitors.
Unique.
Unique.
Other questions on this subject? Okay, we'll be glad to respond to questions on other subjects as well this morning.
Governor, last session, at the end of the session, you vetoed pension fund money to shore up pension funds, and then you said you'd be coming back in the future with some recommendations. Are you going to have some recommendations for 2014?
Interestingly enough, you asked that question today because I think I've got Gretchen Tegeler on the schedule to meet with today. And as you know, Gretchen Tegeler is a former director for the Department of Management. She works, I think, for the Central Iowa taxpayers, and this is an issue that she has great interest in. So we're going to be visiting with her about that, and we're going to be looking at the suggestions and ideas that she and the taxpayers have. We're also going to be visiting also with the public employee organizations. We're going to be talking with legislators to see what the art of the possible is on reforming the pension system. Thank God we're not Illinois, where they have the worst unfunded pension system in the country. Iowa is one of the better ones, but we do have some issues that need to be addressed. There was some action made in 2010, but there's still with primarily on IPERS. But we do have some other pension systems that do need to be addressed, and it was my hope that we can find a way to gain a bipartisan consensus to address those issues. Well, that remains to be seen, but we're going to be looking at it and considering what can be accomplished, and we'll be visiting with Gretchen, and we'll also be visiting with legislators to see what their interests might be in taking action, whether it's this year or next year. These pension issues are complex issues and take considerable understanding and involvement. They can be somewhat controversial as well because the people that are affected, obviously, when I say affected, the people that are the public employees that are covered by the pension system obviously have a very strong and personal interest, but also the taxpayers who also are at risk on these public and pension systems have a great interest in this as well. I think they're going to have a very strong and a dynamic group of people running, and I believe that there's tremendous interest in this open Senate seat. I think the Democrats have made a big mistake deciding not to have a contest and just going with the Democrat congressman. The last thing was we need another congressman in the Senate. Braley's voting record is he voted for Obamacare. He's been a strong defender of Obamacare. He also voted against free trade, which is absolutely critical for our farmers, and he voted for cap and trade, which is devastating to our people, our residents and utility payers. So his record is something, and he's part of the Congress that hasn't balanced a budget all the time he's been here. The deficit's gone up and up and up. So I think there's a lot of reasons why not to elect Bruce Braley, and I think Republicans need to come together and choose whoever they think the strongest candidate for the Senate is. And I think 2014 is a year we have a real opportunity to win this open Senate seat.
By having another trip, though, does it raise the possibility that the nominee will be chosen
in convention? Well, if nobody gets 35% of the vote, then it does go to convention. But generally speaking, and I've been through a few of these, remember when I got in the race for governor, there were six candidates in the race, and people thought it could go to convention. We won very decisively. And we went on to win the general election. So I think that the voters, the Republican primary voters, will get an opportunity to look at and hear from the candidates. There's already been at least one debate. I've been at several events where the candidates have spoken, and I think the more that they get a chance to evaluate the candidates, we'll see somebody emerge. And eventually the primary will be held in June. And I think the party will come together, and I think we'll have a strong candidate.
Do you think that 35% law is still useful in Iowa for deciding?
It is the law.
Right, but the law can be changed. Do you think that is continuing to be useful? Is 35% still the right number? Is that something that should be looked at?
Well, I think it's better than doing it the way it was done before, which was by convention.
Right. And
I. Well, that would be something to look at. And I think we do have that for, like, Des Moines has that for city council, for instance. They have one race where nobody got a majority, so they have a runoff election. That's something.
Do you think you'd have a stronger nominee?
I think it might make sense. I'm certainly willing to look at the idea, the concept of having a runoff election if, let's say, 30 days later. I think a number of states do that. Louisiana, I think, has that kind of a system. Of course, they have a very open primary system where you don't even file by party. And if nobody gets 50, and so then they have a runoff election. Bobby Jindal, you may recall, won re-election without having to have a runoff because he got over 50% of the vote in the primary, and that was it. Well, when you have that many candidates, I think people will kind of take a wait-and-see attitude. They want to wait and see who they think is the strongest. So I know it's frustrating as a candidate, and I've been a candidate in those situations. You've got to kind of prove yourself before people invest in you. But that's kind of the way the system works. And I think, however, once we have a candidate that emerges as the strongest candidate, I think we'll see a lot of people want to contribute and support them throughout the state of Iowa, and I think throughout the country.
Is it possible you're going to endorse at some point?
Well, I don't rule anything out, but it's my goal to help unite the party and see that we do all we can to win the Senate seat, as well as win the other state offices and the legislature. So my goal is to be a unifying force that helps bring Republicans together, strengthens the party, brings new people into the party, and makes us a very strong and effective campaign in 2014.
I have a question in regards. There was a report that came out by the DOT a week or so ago in regards to these undercover license plates. And one of the issues that came out afterwards was that you're now driving a car that has plainclothes license plates, but it is in the database. And Senator Courtney, who's the chair of the Public Safety Budget Committee, says, why can't the governor drive with official state of Iowa license plates like any other state employee does? Why does the governor need to have undercover plates?
Well, I think this is one of the issues is being, well, first of all, I don't have a vehicle that's specifically assigned to me, as far as I know. These are all public safety vehicles, and the Lieutenant Governor and I travel in a lot of different vehicles that are all public safety vehicles. We're in the process of reviewing, what should be done with these vehicles. And my feeling is, when I was governor before, we had a very clearly identified license plate that said number one on it. So that was pretty obvious. I got to tell you a funny story about that. A lot of other states did the same thing. George Mikkelsen was the governor of South Dakota, and he told the story about in South Dakota, they don't have a state trooper driver. They drive in himself. Stops at night at a convenience store in South Dakota, self-serve. He fills the vehicle with gas, goes in to pay for it with his credit card, and the young guy, the attendant there, says, "Well, what's your license plate number?" He says, "Number one." Now, Mikkelsen was a tall guy, pretty easily recognizable governor of South Dakota. He said, "Well, how did you get that?" And he said, "Oh, I guess just lucky, I guess." So I'll never forget that story.
So why don't you go back to doing something like that, so that it is clear?
Well, first, like I said, we travel in a lot of different vehicles, and they're all highway patrol vehicles. So I might be in... Today was in a sedan driven by one of the troopers. Someday it might be, the next day it'll be a van. And there's the people in the governor's security detail, and also the people that work at Terrace Hill are the people that I primarily travel with. I have my own personal vehicle too, which, by the way, has a license plate that says Iowan. And it's a license plate, it's a vanity plate that I pay for and that I've had every year since I left office back in 1999. So it's a pretty identifiable. I mean, how much more identifiable? Except the I is a one. So it says Iowan, but it's 101. But anyway, that's my personal automobile. Well, as you know, I asked Commissioner Paul Tribino to look at a whole series of options that would provide additional funding for the road use tax fund that would be done on a pay-as-you-go basis and protected by the constitutional provisions. And he's put together a series of those ideas and options, and that is being discussed with different interest groups and legislators. And I guess I'm interested to see what kind of support there might be for those ideas, other ideas, and where it might be. I do respect the fact that a lot of Iowans are very concerned about the high cost of commuting to work. And raising the gas tax is not a popular thing with the citizens of this state. I do appreciate what Paul has done to reduce administrative costs and to be able to get more money into the road use tax fund. So I'm interested in working with everybody to see what is the art of the possible and what are the options that make the most sense. Well, first of all, the media does have access to that. That information was shared, I think, with individual groups, and we did. Well, exactly, and I wasn't born yesterday, and we know when you start having these kind of things discussed with a lot of people, it's going to be in the media. But instead of having a big press conference and making a big ballyhoo about it, when these are only options, these are not recommendations. And that's the difference. These are different options that are being considered. If you have a press conference and release it to the media, then it is a recommendation, and then it's something that obviously takes on a different situation than when you have a whole series of different ideas and options that are being reviewed and considered by different groups. And the goal would be, over the next couple of months, does a consensus develop around something or not? And I guess time will tell whether that happens.
So why did you release a list of recommendations for education?
Well, as you may recall, let's go back and talk about education reform. Let's go through this whole process. First of all, I mentioned in my inaugural address in January 2011, and then we invited in Arne Duncan, who is the director of education for the whole country, is the secretary of education. We had an education summit, and he was the keynote speaker, but we had many other speakers and different perspectives. We then came up with a whole series of ideas. The lieutenant governor and I went all over the state and shared those ideas, and we were able to get some things done in 2011 and then 2012. And finally, and we, through that process and through the public input and through the feedback that we received, we honed and changed and improved, and the legislature put together some task forces that included stakeholders. And eventually, out of that came, and we also had a teacher and administrator leadership conference at Drake University, and eventually out of that came the recommendations that we made for the teacher leadership plan, which then went through the entire legislative process and went through amending and changes there, and eventually we were able to get a significant reform passed. And this is basically, I think, when you're talking about difficult, challenging, controversial issues, I think you've got to go through this kind of a process in this state that involves a lot of people to get it done.
You were maybe able to make the distinction back then, though, between ideas and recommendations. Why not this time?
Well, eventually we'll see. And I will make my recommendations in the condition of the state address. So I just say stay tuned, and you'll see if I decide to recommend something or not. And it might be a situation where we don't choose to recommend something, but we continue to work with the legislature to see if we can develop a bipartisan consensus on something that can eventually be approved. No, I've never said that. That was Chet Culver that threatened that. I don't operate that way. I didn't threaten to veto it, and I don't intend to.
What factor was gas tax increase in your 1990 Great Election?
What factor was it?
Did it play a role in people voting for you or not voting for you?
Well, I won re-election in 1990. I remember that. In fact, it was my best re-election campaign. It was against Don Avenson, who was a legislative leader, pretty strong and powerful figure in the legislature, and a lot of people thought it'd be a tough race, and we worked very hard, and we turned out to have a very successful race. But there's a lot of factors that go into it, and I don't know that one issue, it's the candidates, it's the time, it's your record, it's your vision, it's a lot of things that go into deciding elections. And I always try to learn. I'm always like, the next election is always different than the past elections, and it's always good to try to learn from your experiences, and the idea to always be better and have an even better and more focused vision for the future.
Rod, quick final question. Last one.
Based on what worked with education reform, is it time to call a transportation summit?
Well, it took 2.5 years after the summit before we ended up getting education reform. The transportation issues have been around a long time, and what we decided, instead of just saying gas tax, that's what they've been talking about for I don't know how many years, we said, let's think outside the box. Let's look at, are there other options and alternatives? Is there a different approach or a different way that can be done, but one that still does it on a pay-as-you-go basis and that has it protected by the road use tax fund constitutional provisions? Well, I guess, you know, it's what my feeling is. There's not one approach that works for every issue. I think you have to analyze the situation and look at what options, what alternatives make the most sense. And this is the approach that we thought made sense. We know it won't be easy, and we know that if you're going to deal with this issue of the road use tax fund, from looking at it historically, it's always taken bipartisan consensus to accomplish it.
Thanks, Governor. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.